So, welcome back, folks, to another episode of Mentioned in Dispatches. Small crew tonight. Small, but we're making up for it in prominence and importance. We have from Aardwolf's Lair over at YouTube and many other places online. Gary is back to join us again. Howdy, Gary.
Hey.
Hey, there we go. Are we allowed to do Cosby stuff still? Is that...
Probably not. That's probably tasteless at this point.
Yeah, well, yeah. Not that anyone's ever really accused us of exhibiting a ton of good taste in what we've done. But, you know, maybe that's not a line we're in a hurry to cross. So,
possibly not.
Yeah, so. Yeah, like I can clean up anything in post all that well. I can sort of add a laugh track and not a whole lot else. So, hey, before we dive into the main content for tonight, I mentioned Aardwolf's Lair over on YouTube, among other places. What's new at Aardwolf's Lair over on YouTube lately?
Well, we've had a couple of pretty banner months since I have managed to maintain a steady stream of content every week for the last 4 months or so. I launched a Patreon in February, which is doing amazingly well. I figured I would have to constantly be pimping it. That turns out not to be the case. Actually, before it went live, and before I had even made the announcement that it was live, I had patrons. So,
wow.
It's going, you know, I'm not exactly retiring on this income or anything, but it's going to let me buy, I hope, this week, two pieces of anti-glare plexiglass, which
okay.
will be awesome because it's going to help me to, give me a lot more flexibility when making videos, taking pictures and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So it's going real well.
Well, that's, I'm curious, like, how you ended up with patrons before you even announced it. Like, did they have an alert set up for Patreon for the Aardwolf keyword just on the off chance you launched one?
Well, I was putting in the links to the Patreon in the videos. And some people must have caught it there. I mean, I had like five or six patrons before that Friday when it launched. It actually went up on Monday, more or less accidentally, because they have no idea what I'm doing. So I was like, oh, shit, it's live. And then I'm like, well, that's fine. Nobody's going to notice. And I started putting the links in the videos, which has to be done manually, by the way, for each video.
Oh, good Lord.
And then I started getting patrons. So that's all great. I've also my numbers are way up. I looked at like the last 365 days worth of YouTube metrics for as capable as I am of looking at those metrics and drawing something interesting out of them. I'm pulling in like five or six times the amount of traffic on a weekly basis that I was 6 months ago. And really that's just due to steady stream of content.
Which I am
not behind. I am not as far ahead of things as I would like to be, but I am not behind.
That's pretty awesome. I mean, that's really fantastic. So congrats. That's really cool. We, we've been doing our Saturday night fights live on, Saturday nights, hosted by Cyrano, where they're live streaming the tabletop simulator games. And it's not so much like an audience interaction thing, although they will comment on things that you post in the chat during the games, and have a little bit of give and take on there. It's funny, like, if we manage to hit 12 or 13 simultaneous viewers, that's like a banner day, you know, for simultaneous live viewers on a Saturday night. Like, totally get it. You're not going to get 50 people tuning in. But some of those things are starting to hit four figures for viewers after the fact that, what Jim has found and what he's commented on a couple of times is that they've got, there are a lot of guys that will put them on as sort of the background noise when they're painting their figures or when they're playing a different game. They'll have the recordings of the Saturday Night Fights broadcast going in the background, which is...
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, it's kind of a cool thing. I mean, one of the things that we wanted to try to do with the Dragoons in terms of some video content, I was really wanting to do some sort of live kind of war game night across America sort of thing. What I was... The dream state, right, would have been to be able to go hit like a YouTube page or hit some sort of stream on our site where we had live cameras at three or four different game stores around the country where there were war game nights going on, almost kind of like Baseball Night in America on ESPN, right? Where War Game Night in America and check in on all these different games going. That's a pipe dream, right? That's not ever really going to happen. But, you know, being able to broadcast a live game through Tabletop Simulator is pretty damn cool, I thought.
Yeah, one of the goals that I have actually for the channel is to be able to do live play. You just need more equipment than I have to do that. I mean, like face-to-face live play.
Yeah, yeah.
You just need more equipment than I have to be able to do that. You need, like, actual video cameras and stuff like that, not, like, a webcam and a cell phone.
Yeah.
So, it's all on the list.
Yes. Well, and now that you've got a Patreon, is the URL something easy enough that we can verbally throw it out before I add it to the links with this episode?
It should be. It is www.patreon.com/Aardwolf.
All right. Easy enough. So, and for folks that know and follow Aardwolf's Lair, the spelling of Aardwolf won't be that tough.
Nope. A-R-D-W-U-L-F. I do get people misspelling it with two A's from time to time. Apparently there's some kind of southern hemisphere animal called an aardwolf.
Connected to the aardvark, I would guess, just from the spelling?
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Until you just now mentioned it 10 seconds ago, I'd never heard of such a thing, so
me
okay.
Completely random.
You'd think as many of those BBC nature shows as I watch, I might have heard of it at some point or another, but no, you know, that's...
Well,
that's
they don't go to Australia because the wildlife will eat them.
Yeah, well, okay, fair point. We do need to make just a very brief pause in our regular game programming to note for our audience that Pluto TV has brought back the 24-007 All James Bond All the Time channel to their streaming channel options. So if you're a James Bond fan at all, Pluto TV channel 007 has 24/7 James Bond running. As we are recording this, The Spy Who Loved Me is on.
And what's Pluto TV?
It's one of the streaming services that you can get through like a Roku or a Fire Stick.
Okay.
It was recently bought by Viacom, the guys that own CBS. And so they've spiffed it up and cleaned it up a little bit. It is ad-supported. It does not include a DVR, but it's essentially what cable TV was 25 years ago. you're sort of stuck with commercials, but there's a ton of different stuff that they do stream. There's a half a dozen movie channels, maybe more than that. News, entertainment. There's an MST3K show channel that's just MST3K on a loop. There's Doctor Who on a loop. There's nothing but a Doctor Who channel. There's a lot of the smaller news networks like Newsy and Cheddar have looped news networks on it. Look, RT America's on there too, so you know this isn't full credibility, right? But there's a Court TV station. There's all kinds of stuff. They've got a decent selection of music stations. It is seriously what cable TV was 25 years ago before everyone had a DVR. But they have a 24/7 James Bond channel. They had it in the fall. It went away right around the holidays, and they've now brought it back. So.
Well, that's neat if you haven't somehow seen all of those already.
Or even if you can recite many of them, as I probably could. It's still nice to have. You know?
I've seen The Spy Who Loved Me many times, I can tell you that.
Yes. Well, you've seen Catherine Bach many times, is what you meant to say.
Well,
right?
Yeah, that's true, too. She was the thing.
Yes.
When I was an early teenager experiencing strange hormones.
I watched a lot of James Bond movies growing up because when we were in Europe for the 5 years in the mid-80s we were over there, we were never really in range of AFN TV, and so we watched a lot of stuff on what was the then newfangled device of the VCR. And we had a whole bunch of James Bond flicks on videotape, and so I watched a whole lot of For Your Eyes Only and Goldfinger and Spy Who Loved Me and, unfortunately, Moonraker.
I have an uncommon fondness for Moonraker, even though it is terrible by any objective measure.
Yeah. I actually, while consuming literally 3 months of James Bond 24/7 on a loop, out in my office, cause I don't have a cable TV box out in my office, but I do have a Roku player out here And I work from home almost exclusively anymore, so I had Bond on a loop out here. I finally sat down and wrote my definitive ranking of the Bond flicks up through Dalton, because that's as far as they were showing on the station at the time.
Oh,
and
okay.
and actually publish that out on medium.com. So you can go find my definitive rankings of the James Bond flicks. For Your Eyes Only is number one. You Only Live Twice is at the bottom. You can pick them in between. Have your own fun with it. But that's, I have a very odd fondness for Bond just from growing up with watching a ton of them.
I can understand that.
And having been to a handful of the locations, you know, when we were living in Europe, I've been to a couple of the places where some of the Bond movies take place, which is kind of a neat thing to do.
That would be cool.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we didn't bring you on here to talk Bond flicks. Happy to help you pimp your Patreon. But we brought you on because you just recently got back, as we are recording this, right? Not necessarily as the audience is hearing it. You just came back from Winterfest not too long ago.
That's true, but I think I've been to three conventions since last time I was on, actually. Compass Expo in November, Winter Offensive in January, and just now, last week, Winterfest.
Yeah, so definitely Winter Offensive since the last time we spoke. I know we had talked to Chris about Compass. I thought you came and talked with us about Compass Con as well, or was that just a phone call you and I happened to have?
Hey, I got a lot going on. Maybe I forgot. That's totally possible.
I do know that we had talked last fall post Origins about, you know, Buckeye Game Fest and other things looking forward, which included Compass. But yeah, so we've got all kinds of convention stuff for you to regale us with. Let's maybe do this backward just because Winterfest is the most recent, the most current. For the audience, Winterfest is what?
Winterfest is a small club event held in Sandusky, Ohio in February. It's usually Valentine's Day weekend, awkwardly enough. But it's a whole week event, much like Concept World Expo or WBC. It actually runs a little longer than those events. It actually starts on Friday and runs through the following Sunday. So if you are there the entire time, you have a lot of time to get in a big, large game. And the focus is definitely on large games. There's a couple of small things that get set up as side games or whatever. But the focus is definitely on large games. I'm telling people, and it sounds hilarious, that Case Blue was the third largest game at Winterfest this year.
You realize how insane that sounds.
Yeah, that sounds nuts. But it's nevertheless true. We had two games of the GTS Market Garden, Devil's Cauldron and Where Eagles Dare Going. One of those two games played with a lot of house rules. Those are mostly guys from Northeast Ohio. Whereas I was in the other game where we played with pretty close to the rules as written with some semi-official house rules intended to support the campaign that modify some events and stuff like that. And I feel like in large part, both groups had a really good time. Although the group with the house rules had some kind of goofy stuff happen, like they got to pick their own drop zones, for example, which kind of breaks the game if you don't make any other adjustments. So what we saw was the British First Airborne dropped in the drop zones immediately next to Arnhem and immediately south of the river. So they got the entire division into Arnhem. And I mean, can they be dug out eventually? Probably, but not in the span of the what the campaign entails. I mean, it's like a week long campaign.
I imagine so, that dramatically changed the odds of what was happening in the city to
get
the
totally
whole division
did.
In there.
And so, I mean, I think you can do that, but there are some other restrictions on movement of some of the German formations, German commands up north that have to stay north of the Rhine, and they did not adjust those. So in addition to that problem, the Germans were not able to redirect their forces to just try to contain the British in Arnhem. So our game had some pretty interesting things happen in it, though. We got the British First Airborne landed, and as happened historically, they got a battalion and a half or so into Arnhem, took the bridge, briefly, I think, held both sides of the bridge. They did get their drop zones overrun, unfortunately, and hilariously enough, they suffered a lot of casualties on that drop because their drop zone was overrun on the second day or third day. And so like a whole brigade was dropping and, they took about 50% casualties. Following that, a company of the elite British 1st Airborne was annihilated in combat by the SS Marching Band. This was a memorable moment.
So, many, many thoughts crossing my mind at the moment. First of all, there's a counter for the SS Marching Band in the game?
There absolutely is. It's the only Market Garden game I'm aware of that has a counter for that absolutely historical formation where they, hey, you, the marching band, here's some guns. You're in the front line now. That absolutely happened. As far as I know, the only other company-scaled game of Market Garden is It Never Snows, and I believe it does not have a counter for that unit.
That is kind of, look, I know that in the U.S. doctrine, like the divisional bands, their actual combat role is that they are the guard force for the division main headquarters. That's the way the U.S. doctrine is written. So if you're doing a company-level war game in Korea, then yeah, you would have the band out there guarding the division main headquarters somewhere. But I got to confess, I have never won. What's the unit symbol on that thing? Is it like a little bugle?
Yeah, no, it's a symbol I've never seen before, oddly enough.
Yeah.
The Grand Tactical series uses historical unit symbols, so okay. The American symbols for the most, and I think the British too, are mostly similar to, but not identical to the modern NATO symbols that we see so often.
Yep.
But the German units all have historical German unit symbols on them.
Okay.
So presumably they managed to dig this up. And I thought that was going to be a kind of a pain to deal with because it's like, oh, what the heck is this? But it really doesn't matter. You can actually tell what the unit's capabilities are from their fire type. So as long as you can see their fire type and their range and the other factors on the counter, it really doesn't matter what the unit is.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a great time. GTS is something that I've been wanting to get into for a long time. And I had owned Where Eagles Dare at one point and traded it away because it's like, I'm never going to play this. This is the only GTS game I have, it's not a good, you know, learning, module because it's got a lack of, small footprint scenarios. They are also incidentally working on, a GTS 2.0 rules update to that whole thing, and the plan is to reissue it in one huge box containing both Devil's Cauldron and Where Eagles Dare. So I think that's a ways away yet, but it is moving. I have a word from Winter Offensive, from the actual folks involved, that there is progress on that thing.
I will say Devil's Cauldron has got to be one of the best-looking maps I've seen in a long time.
The maps are beautiful.
Yeah.
That's true of all the GTS games, actually, with the possible exception of the North Africa one, which I haven't really looked at. But although I picked up a couple more because I knew I was going to be playing it. So I picked up Where Eagles Dare again, and I picked up Operation Mercury and The Greatest Day. Okay. And the maps are all gorgeous.
Let's be honest. There's only so much you can do to make North Africa gorgeous.
Well, that's pretty much true. I mean, it's a desert. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
There's sand and dunes and some rocks.
Although, I think it was in a C3I magazine. I'm not 100% sure. Maybe it was one of the MMT magazines. There's one, it's Bravery in the Sand. It's a magazine game, but it is North Africa. I mean, I played this thing 10, 12 years ago. But it actually had a pretty decent looking map for being a North Africa game. And then the one for Toten Sontag, which actually is a small battle within what is covered by Bravery in the Sand. The Toten Sontag map looks pretty good also.
Okay.
So, for folks that are looking for that oddball, off the wall, actual good looking North Africa map. DAC 2 might be a good looking map. You can't tell because it's completely buried under counters the entire time. So,
well, it's the counter density in DAC is not that high, actually. Hilariously enough, this came up at Winterfest because DAC 2 is actually one of my relatively short wish list. It's one of the games on that list.
Yeah.
And somebody was selling, you know who, I won't mention their name, but you can figure it out as soon as I tell you, that it was going for $995.
Oh, good God.
So that's the exact reaction. Are those people crazy?
Did it sell?
Probably not yet.
Oh, okay.
That's for sure. I mean, good luck. I'm sure their customer service is amazing, but yes. I'm not paying $1,000 for that thing.
If you ever want a good chuckle for oh my God, I can't believe they're charging that, look up what they're charging for Maneuver Warrior.
Yeah, you were telling me about that, actually. I haven't checked that lately, but as I recall, it was going quite high.
It was going for mid-200s, which if I'm being totally honest, might be the sum total of actual net profit I ever made off of the entire lifespan of publishing stuff through Bayonet Games. Look, I was not very good at running a game company. I was very bad with the numbers. It was more to say I was doing it than anything else. And I enjoyed it, but I absolutely did not make any money doing it either. So
now nobody's in this hobby to get rich.
Oh, God, no. So
it is definitely a net money loser, in fact.
Yeah, that was, as I recall, one of your comments from last year's Wargaming panel at Origins, there was, in fact, negative cash flow from being involved in this business.
Oh, totally.
So, all right, so Winterfest, you got some Grand Tactical stuff in there. I'm assuming there was an OCS game in there that you darkened the table with your shadow for a few moments.
Well, there were three OCS games. There was a side game of Smolensk, which I'm not even sure that actually got played. There was a playtest game of Third Winter, which will be the next OCS game to be up for pre-order, from what they tell me. And OCS Honcho Chip Saltzman is the assistant honcho. Curtis Bear is the actual honcho. They were both at Winterfest. I'll get to that, but per Curtis. Hungarian Rhapsody is going to hit the printer anytime now, so we're going to see that in a couple of months. And then after that, Third Winter will go up for pre-order. And it's my belief that Third Winter will hit its number more quickly than it took Hungarian Rhapsody, which is a little bit of an obscure subject, and it didn't get a lot of exposure in the playtest circuit here in the U.S., it seems to me, considering I've never seen it on a table. And I have seen Third Winter on tables 10 times at multiple events. So there was the Case Blue game, which was just Case Blue, meaning Case Blue and Enemy at the Gates, not Guderian's Blitzkrieg 2, which is a separate game that you can play with it. I've been thinking about that, having done it, and I think it's a mistake to actually put the two games together. It's too big, and the trouble is that one-third of it will be a quiet sector where there's nothing to do and the players are bored.
Don't want.
Yeah. So, interestingly enough, Chip and Curtis, the guys kind of managing OCS right now, came to Winterfest and played BCS the whole time. Now, they get involved in the OCS stuff too a little bit, but their main game was Brazen Chariots, the Tobruk game, the latest in that series. So I thought that was very interesting. I'm seeing a lot of additional traffic on BCS over the last couple of months, online, on Twitter, on YouTube, and on Facebook too. And there were two big BCS games that occurred at Winterfest. There was that Brazen Chariots game and a game of Last Blitzkrieg, which is the big bulge game, first game in the series. And those guys, they had four people coming in, one of whom came in, I believe, from New Zealand to play it. And those guys really liked the system as well.
I would think so. I could see the dudes from OCS wanting to go to a convention and play literally anything but OCS.
Well, that's fair enough. I mean, I know Chip at least plays a lot of OCS, as you can imagine. And he was at Winter Offensive and playing OCS there. He's got a Scorpion in a Bottle. It's a mini map OCS extract out of Third Winter that may get bundled with Third Winter, and it may get done up as a magazine game of some kind.
Okay.
So that, I'm not sure they have made a decision on that yet.
What else did you manage to get into besides your big GTS game?
My side game was Red Storm, the relatively recent release from GMT. This is an operational air game, essentially the same system as Downtown, except that it's Cold War gone hot in 1987. And it was neat. It's kind of designed to push my buttons personally, because there's a lot of paperwork, bookkeeping, and record sheets and log sheets and such, plot and movement and stuff like that. And I love that kind of stuff. So it's actually, it actually reminded me of Flat Top. Oddly okay. enough, even though the topic is different and the period is different and it's air instead of naval, but the plotting and the hidden stuff, it was a moderated game. So it reminded me very much of Flat Top.
Well, that's cool. That's cool. Of the games you were not participating in, was there something particularly cool that kind of caught your eye in an off the wall way? Like, obviously you're expecting a lot of OCS stuff. You're expecting some of those other things because it's Winterfest. It's a week. It's Monster Games. It's that kind of thing. But was there something that you kind of walked by and went, hey, that's kind of cool?
Well, I mean, this is a small event, right? So what I've just described, there was a Day of Days game happening. There was a Todeler Krieg game, the Axis Empires version of Todeler Krieg, and a couple of side games. And what I have mentioned so far is what was running. And that's about it. I don't think I left anything out. There was a War and Peace game, too, actually.
The new one or the original?
The original. The new okay. one's not out yet, as far as I'm aware.
Well, but that doesn't mean that somebody didn't have a playtest or pre-press copy.
Oh, that's true. Stalingrad 42 got played as well. So, but otherwise, I'm pretty sure I'm not forgetting anything. So of the stuff that was getting played there, the thing that I wasn't playing and that I would like to play the most is BCS.
Okay.
It's a really interesting looking system. A lot of people are talking about it as a game system that does a lot of what OCS does without the necessity of moving of truck and supply points around on the map.
Because, you know, what OCS needs is more record keeping.
Exactly.
You know, anytime I've ever had an OCS game, what I thought was, you know, this needs just a little more admin work.
So I was thinking about that because I'm working on an instructional series of videos on OCS, among other things. This is kind of the new main project for the YouTube channel. The vast majority of OCS games ship with maps, counters, rules, and two player aid cards, and that's it. There's a turn record track and a weather track that are generally on the map. And generally, you'll have maybe some off-map boxes or something like that. But OCS really, all the record keeping is actually on the map. The record keeping aspect is handled with counters. So there's really no tracks or general records tracks or anything or counters to track a whole bunch of fiddly little factors. None of that's really in OCS. It's actually pretty clean in that respect. One of the local OCS guys popped in for a couple of days. And this is a guy who has tried GTS and describes it as too fiddly for him. And somebody at our table was like, well, wait a minute. Is it fiddlier than OCS? And he started to say, oh, it's much fiddlier. And then he started thinking about it. And it's like, yeah, it's really not. OCS is fairly fiddly in a lot of ways.
Yes. Yes. Well, the other thing with OCS is while there's not a lot of turn-by-turn record keeping, there is a whole bunch of having to remember a lot of the modifiers and adjustments you make within combat. You know, you've got these odds, but then shift this column this way based on this type of unit with this modifier against this other kind of unit.
You know how to get through that particular rules burden is to play it twice a week for a couple of years.
Yeah.
We don't have any issue with that. What we do have an issue keeping track of sometimes, because we play once or twice a week. We play a given game once a week, but sometimes we have two different OCS games going, is the management of the tempo. So I had skipped, missed a couple of weeks of Baltic Gap, which is what we're playing now. And then so I show up, and the other guy who's playing the Russians with me is not there that night, so I've got to run his side of the Russians too. And it's baffling to step into that and say, I don't know where his supply lines is. He's got these units here. Where are they tracing from? I have no idea. Units are hidden because you hide the important units like HQs and rail conversion units and supply extenders. You hide those things under a stack of other things. So I had no idea where anything was. And even, you know, playing the same units every week, you come back to that and you scratch your head a little bit and say, okay, what was I doing exactly? And then it comes back to you after you pick up some stacks and look and see where stuff's at. But that kind of like tempo management that you have to do with OCS, that's where the sort of logistical overhead as a player is. It's not in keeping, I don't think it's keeping track of modifiers and stuff. I mean, yeah, there's modifiers, but there's not really that many. I mean, it's no Goss, that's for sure.
Yeah. In the meantime, you're going to get zero sympathy from anybody in the audience about the fact that you've got twice a week OCS games.
Yeah, well, we're going to have to make some adjustments because one of our guys whose house we play at on one of those weeks is moving to not Columbus. So I guess what that means is we're going to be playing OCS at my place, which is fine. But, you know, adjustments will be made.
Yes. So the all right. So Winterfest was a blast. Is it on the calendar for next year yet, or are we just anticipating Valentine's-ish weekend?
Valentine's-ish weekend. They haven't signed the contract. This was the second year of a 2-year contract. They are going to sign with the same location, which is a great location, and I'll talk about that in a second. They're going to sign with the same location. There was concern last year when there was 52 people there, and the room was ready to bust at the seams with people. This year there were 32. A big part of that was that the Federation Empire crew did not show up. They had some things that came up that interfered with a couple of their people being able to play. So they couldn't run the game without whatever X number of people that is. So, okay. So a couple of them still showed up, and in fact, one of them was playing GTS with us. But otherwise, they're going to sign with the same hotel. So it's a Best Western in Sandusky, Ohio, and it's in February. For those who don't know, Sandusky is where Cedar Point, the amusement park, is. There is no activity in Sandusky, Ohio, in February. There is not. So what that means is that there is no competition for space with the hotel. The hotel is relatively inexpensive. If you're splitting the hotel two ways, it works out to be about $45 a night. And if you're there, even if you're there 8 nights, it's not an obscene amount of money. Of the 3 convention hotels that I have been in the last 3 or 4 months, I like that one the best. We pretty much have the whole place to ourselves. The staff is responsive. They have coffee 24 hours a day, which is critically important, at which neither of the other 2 hotels did. The breakfast is hotel free breakfast. It's not gourmet breakfast, but it's not bad. It's a little better than the place that they have Winter Offensive at, I thought. And it's definitely better than the Red Lion, whatever, in Cromwell, Connecticut, that Compass Expo was at. So if you haven't heard, the news broke a couple of weeks ago, and I did a whole video essentially running down Compass Expo and complaining about that hotel. It was closed by the state of Connecticut
A
couple of weeks ago for some kind of legal issue, not because it's a crap hole, but because they have some kind of legal or tax or financial or something like that problems. So it sounds like Compass Expo is going to be relocating next year as well.
Yeah, well, break some rules, get in trouble.
Yeah, and we did not have that whole place to ourselves. There was like some kind of prom or something like that there. I don't know what it was. I think it was some kind of fraternity sorority social or something like that. And I'm like, why are all these 20-year-olds walking around in zoot suits and cocktail dresses?
It can't be any worse than the year that the Democratic National Convention or the Ohio Democratic Party decided to host their annual banquet with then Vice President Biden coming to speak as the keynote speaker during Origins at the Hyatt.
Really? When was that? I don't remember that.
It was 2012. It was during one of the re-election campaigns. I want to say it was 2012. It may have been 2008, and it wasn't yet Vice President Biden. It was during one of the election campaigns, and it had to be 08. It had to be 08 because the TerrorWorks guys were still there. Because the Secret Service went absolutely apeshit about the fact that the TerrorWorks guys were running around in camo with airsoft guns. And the Secret Service is going nuts over these guys. And the TerrorWorks guys are like, we've been doing this for 10 years. Like, this isn't new. This isn't like we just showed up because you guys were having a party. And, and my favorite moment from that whole convention, I had gone down to the Hyatt for, to the Hyatt end of the building for something. I think I was meeting some people up at the bar or whatever it was. And so I'm in the elevator and we're going to whatever floor with the elevator. And there's a half a dozen gamers in there. Not the bad stereotype gamers, right? Everybody had, you know, showered within the last 24 hours and was using deodorant and all that, but we're gamers. And there's two couples that come on in their tuxedos and ball gowns and whatever else. And as they're getting out, one of the ladies makes a remark of something about decline of Western civilization, something or other. One of the gamer ladies in the elevator with us, like, sticks her foot in the door and is like, excuse me? And so, of course, the four fancy dressed people all kind of turn around, and the one lady is a little ashen faced now, realizing that she's been heard. And the lady kind of looks through the elevator right there, and she's like, I don't know about you guys, but just the people I know in here, we've got like four PhDs and seven master's degrees, and we're pretty set on our contributions to Western society. And so it was a great sort of classic sticking up for the gamers kind of moment. But yeah, like, cell phones wouldn't work in that entire end of the building that whole night because the Secret Service had their scramblers going. It was a real pain in the ass, and all of the party apparatchiks were acting like we were infringing on their turf, like we hadn't been there for 15 years or anything. So that was quite an amusing contrast that weekend.
Thinking about it, I think that's the origins that I missed due to physical issues.
Yeah, it could have been.
I've only missed one since is that true? No, yeah, that is true. I've only missed one since 1995.
I've missed two since 2005. One was the year they moved it to May, and then one was the year I'd gotten laid off a couple months before and just couldn't afford, you couldn't justify taking the trip. So those are the two.
Well, that's not a problem for me since I live around the corner from the Hyatt. So.
Well, yeah, and like, I usually stay with my folks, but still, just the time away from working on finding a job here and, you know, the expense of getting there and all that was more than I was able to stomach that year. So I've missed two since 2005.
I sympathize.
Cool. So backing up from Winterfest, you had Winter Offensive.
So this is Multiman's event in Bowie, Maryland. And it's a very, very solid event with the caveat that it's about 60 or 70% ASL. The good news which I did not play there, and which I really haven't played lately. The good news for me is it's about 30% now, Great Campaigns of the American Civil War, which is what I did go to play, and I had a great time with that. We did the Long Roads to Antietam campaign, had a great time with it. We were only there for one whole day. We got there on Friday, stayed there the whole day on Saturday, and then came home on Sunday. The drive wasn't bad. I expected, it's like right smack between D.C. and Baltimore. I expected traffic nightmares. We really didn't have any of that. We actually, on the way out, we actually gave Dean Essig a ride to the Baltimore airport, which was no problem at all. So it was a really good event. I was really happy with it. Multiman does sell stuff there. They were quite a bit less aggressive with that than Compass was, where Compass brought like the, you know, everything in their warehouse they brought. And if they ran out of something, and they did an interceptor race, they ran out of like every day. Then they would send somebody down to the warehouse down the street to get more.
Yeah, I was going to say, for Compass, the warehouse is like walking distance to that hotel, isn't it?
Yeah, and everything was 50% off, which is awesome. So I walked out of there with like 9 games, and I walked out of Winter Offensive with like 9 games. What? So there was I think, 2 tables of OCS happening, 2 tables of BCS happening. There was maybe 2 tables of SCS happening. There was 1 GTS table. The entire rest of the room, and that room is filled to the rafters, was ASL or Great Campaigns of the American Civil War.
Let's be honest about CompassCon, that even if things hadn't been 50% off, you probably would have walked out of there with about 9 games.
That is very likely accurate. They might have been different games.
Yeah. Because
there were certainly things I bought that were like, oh, it's really a really good deal. I should buy this. What they didn't have was really anything that was out of print that had been out of print for any particular length of time. I think me and the buddy I went with walked out with the two last copies of Hearts and Minds, though.
Yeah.
Which is was out of print even going in, and I bullied Bill into retrieving a copy from the secret stash.
But I mean, look, let's be honest. We've known you for a while. We know what you're going to walk out of a game convention with, right?
I am somewhat predictable in that respect. But you know, at Winter Offensive, a lot of this stuff was stuff I've had my eye on for years. War of the Suns was something that I've had my eye on for years. I've wanted that thing forever, and it's expensive, right? It's hard to say, all right, I'm going to go drop $125 or whatever it costs through NWS, and that's the discounted price, or the $264 The Greatest Day. I mean, it's a big deal to buy that stuff, and when it was all in front of me and all at a discount, you know, a decent discount, I just said screw it, and I just pretty much bought everything that I wanted to buy from Multiman.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty caught up on Multiman stuff at this point.
Fair enough. So for Winter Offensive, tons of Civil War stuff that you were playing.
Mm-hmm.
But not a ton of, did you get in any other stuff? I mean, Winter Offensive's sort of a shorter thing. It's not like Winterfest where you're there for, you know, a week.
Right. Yeah, it's a traditional 4-day thing. No, I didn't play anything else. I played, just Great Campaigns, the American Civil War, which I was perfectly happy to stick with that. Moved surprisingly quickly, actually. Much faster. I mean, the counter density is way lower than it would be in, say, OCS, where it's like, okay, I personally am responsible for 800 counters, so it's going to take me an hour or 2 hours or whatever to do my movement phase, right?
Just to find them all.
that's absolutely right. So, damn it, I lost the rail unit again. Where is it?
What happened to the band? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we didn't lose the... I was not responsible for the band. So that was not my unit.
You know, you mentioned War of the Suns. Speaking of good-looking maps, War of the Suns map's a pretty good-looking map, too.
Yeah, it's a very attractive game. I know a lot of people had issues with the rules. Those issues seem to stem from two reasons. One is that there are unit substitutions that have to occur in the course of the game. That is admittedly a pain in the rear, but I dealt with that in Europa, so I am more than happy to deal with it in War of the Suns. The other is just the general level of disorganization of the rule book that comes in the box, but there's a newer version of those rules that I think are cleaner and clearer, so I will be working on those. As soon as I can get the thing punched, I have a somewhat large backlog on getting things punched and clipped.
You know, if you pick up some of those new lock and load games, they don't need clipping. I'm just saying.
And actually, somebody had busted out World of War 85 at Winterfest, and it's a sharp-looking game. It's a beautiful, beautiful presentation. I have sort of I'm in sort of an odd position with lock and load publishing because I have a really high opinion of David and what he's doing. I have a really high opinion of their games and the production values and the rules for the ones I've played. But the fact remains that I just don't like any of their games. they're just doing games that are on topics I'm not into or I'm not in the market for another game on those subjects. Lock and Load Tactical is a fine game, and I don't need to replace ASL in that sphere. So that really the only thing they have coming down the pipe that I absolutely am interested in is their new edition of Trial of Strength whenever that shows up. However, on the subject of large format, large footprint, massive time commitment, East Front World War II games, I just picked up through a friend of a friend a copy of Compass's Proud Monster Deluxe. So I'm back in the giant East Front game business now, too.
Because what the world needed, just absolutely needed, was another giant footprint East Front game.
Yeah. Well, Trial of Strength, I had the original Panther Games version. It's long gone, of course. And that's a good game. It's a very good game. And I will be very interested whenever they decide they're going to launch that. I think they're going to do it as a Kickstarter.
Yeah, I mean, you could easily enough forgive Dave for being a little distracted by Kickstarter lately.
well, he's got Dave's got a lot going on. So he's doing a great job with that. He's doing a great job of promotion and getting communication out to the customers and the fans and the people who are potential customers and fans. Probably a better job than anybody else that I am seeing in the pure wargaming publications industry at the moment.
Yeah, yeah, could definitely agree with that. All right, so backing up from Winterfest, let's not Compass Con quickly. We've already alluded to a couple of the things you did at Compass. But what all did we get at Compass Con? And not so much the games, but what did you get in for gameplay? Because I know one of the big deals with Compass Con is come play with the designers, come sit down with the designers and play things that aren't even available yet.
Yeah, so Compass Expo is a very different event than it's a company sponsored event. So you're kind of thinking, okay, so it's going to be a lot like Winter Offensive, right? But it's not. Every table was playing something different. There were a couple tables of CSS happening, and a couple tables of a couple of those Civil War games were for the Union, I think. Otherwise, every table had something different, and a surprisingly small amount of it was from Compass. I mean, it was mostly Compass stuff. Don't get me wrong, but I mean, there was even somebody busted out their ancient copy of Panzergruppe Guderian, for example. There was MMP stuff. I actually played a little bit of Panzer Battles, SCS Panzer Battles, at Compass Expo. I played. There's a game called I can't remember what it's called now. It's from an Italian designer and a Spanish publisher called Four Dados, and it's about the pre-war build up to World War II. And it was pretty fun. It took a while to play, but it was pretty fun. I played Firefly. I played Dune, the new version of Dune from Gale Force 9, which is fantastic. I was the Harkonnens, and I never got a chance to stab somebody in the neck, which is the whole point of playing the Harkonnens, is because you're going to get to betray somebody because you've got a whole handful of traitors. I played a couple other things. There were things I wanted to get into. I actually wanted to do CSS, but I'm actually glad I didn't at this point, because had I done so, it would have confused me when the time came to play GTS, which is a somewhat related system, just a couple weeks ago. So I've intentionally steered away from either the newer version of GTS, which is substantially different, or CSS, of which I think there's six games in that series now out from Compass. And it's an interesting looking series. I have the three Pacific Island games in that series. So I'd hope to do something with that at some point in the not too terribly distant future. Yeah, for those who feel like GTS is too fiddly, CSS streamlines it a lot.
Well, thank goodness for that.
Retaining a lot of the same, at least some of the same ideas. Definitely that the whole chip pull mechanism, where there's both a chip pull system and an entire economy behind the chip pull system with different kinds of points that you do different things with. That is in CSS.
That almost sounds like another podcast to sit here and differentiate all of the OCS versus CSS versus GTS and sort of give everybody the one over the world view of what all these different systems do for you.
Oh, I could talk about this for hours.
Yeah, well, we've only got about 5 minutes left.
Unfortunately.
Well, no, that just means you got to come back and do another podcast.
Just let me know.
Yeah, see? That's what I love about Gary. It's not like it's twisting arms to get him to show up and talk about games.
No, the only things that get in our way are scheduling difficulties.
Yeah. It's not quite as bad as the, you know, all those online memes about trying to get everybody together once a week for D&D, but it is still occasionally a hassle to try and synchronize the schedule. Of course, yeah, I had lost sight of exactly when Winterfest was, and I was originally trying to schedule you to come on and talk about Winterfest while you were at Winterfest.
That would have been awkward, because the webcam on my laptop is garbage.
Well, I will say it wouldn't have been the first time we'd done a podcast recording from a game location, because we've twice recorded podcasts with Jim Werbeneth from over at Gamers Armory here in town, from at the store. And And you would think that, you know, game night in the background would be a little distracting, and neither time has it been all that bad. Like, you can tell we're out at a location and that there's a bit of a home of activity in the background, but it's never so much that it overwhelms the recording, which is great.
Yeah, I noticed that on my video that I captured of the GTS game at Winterfest as well. It's the audio is surprisingly, I mean, there's certainly background noise, but the audio is much cleaner than I expected it to be. I expected it to be complete trash.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. Like, you can actually get some decent recording from on site if you kind of know what you're doing and you've got even halfway decent equipment. But it's as much in your setup as anything else. The quick infomercial for everyone else: you are actually going to be not just sort of hanging out at our booth, you know, munching on our food and being sarcastic. You're actually going to be running a couple of games with us this summer at Origins.
That's true. Sounds like it will be at least Commands and Colors.
So for the actual formal ticketed events, we've got a couple of Commands and Colors epic scale games that Gary's going to be leading those with some Ancients. And so the idea is some multiplayer, like multiple people on each side going at each other over CNC Ancients. But I can't imagine we're not going to get something else on a table somewhere. David Thompson will stop by with something for us to play at a minimum. And you know, whatever else the guys from the Players Aid show up with or whatever else we bring with us, we'll have plenty of stuff to monkey around with there. Between now and Origins, are there any other conventions you were planning to hang out at?
No. I think you sent me that info about Mace in North Carolina. That's just not happening this year. Not with the volatility happening with me right now.
Yes.
Origins is not a problem because, like I said, it's right around the corner. Not time wise, but literally distance wise, I could walk there. I'm also still hoping to get to WBC this year. We'll see if that actually occurs. But it is and there's a pretty good chance, I think, that about 80% chance that I will be there for at least a day or two, even if I can't make it for the whole shebang.
As a point of clarification, Mace happens after Origins. It is generally right around Veterans Day weekend.
Oh, is it?
Yes. It is a November event.
Oh, okay.
And for folks that are curious, it is in Charlotte, North Carolina. It originally started down the street in High Point. But it is in Charlotte, North Carolina. It is a little role-playing heavy, but has a significant tabletop game component. It is not a huge war game convention. We are working on trying to get a little more wargaming event stuff in there. It helps when you actually know the guy that runs the convention and you can call him up and go, "Hey, Jeff, how about we do this?" And Jeff says, "Hey, that'd be great." And then you can't get off work to actually make it there. So
I bet that they need some traveler happening there.
I bet they wouldn't say no. So
as it happens, I've mentioned this on Twitter. I am going to be starting an actual, honest to goodness, face to face traveler campaign in about 2 weeks.
Knowing some of the dudes in our forums as well as I do, I'm betting that if you wanted a play by forum traveler game over at the Armchair Dragoons, you would not be short on participants.
Oh, that's pretty plausible. There's actually a decent amount of live play traveler stuff on YouTube. I mean, you kind of got to hunt for it. But there's more than I expected there to be, actually.
Well, you know, it's not like traveler some fly by night system that's a, you know, Johnny come lately fad or anything, you know.
I mean, it's only been around for 40 years.
Yeah. it was one of the original core four.
It is literally, it's 43 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I mentioned I posted something on Twitter through the Armchair Dragoons account at one point. I had taken one of the WotC D&D surveys online, and I'm going to see if I can pull this up on my laptop real quick because I had to laugh really hard at this. It was talking about sort of how were you introduced to D&D, and choose all that apply. And so there's a friend or family member introduced me, a store owner or employee recommended it. I saw people playing it at a store, and then you start to get into the ones that did not apply when you and I started playing. I saw a celebrity or online personality I like played or mentioned it. The idea
it was in E.T. It was a D&D set on a shelf in a closet in E.T.
The idea that any celebrity would have admitted to playing it back when we started is so far beyond the pale.
It is so bizarre now. What did I notice? Other than the insanity that Wendy's released a tabletop RPG.
Yes.
I mean, how crazy is that?
Yeah. There's a beer company that has player characters printed on the beer cans now. Really? Further down, just real quick, how were you introduced to D&D? As you get a little further down, I saw it being played in a TV show movie, so there's E.T., right? I watched the D&D game being played online. I saw it on social media, right? Yeah.
I shared this on Twitter the other day. You can buy Purple Worm branded coffee now. I couldn't make this up. It's like we're living in a parallel universe now. It's so bizarre.
Can you imagine going back to 1981 and telling, 10-year-old us, hey, this is what's going to happen in 40 years. We never would have believed it. We would have believed flying cars before that.
Wow, that's absolutely true. I mean, it was in Blade Runner and everything.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So, well, listen, Gary, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you for swinging by. We appreciate it. Always love having you on the show.
Be happy to come back whenever. Just let me know.
One of these days, we're going to totally crash one of your videos,
Oh, that's totally fine. In fact, we should do a big video thing. I don't know what that would be about, but at Origin, since we're all going to be there.
Okay, twist my arm. Oh.
Well, it could happen.
So the dream state for me for Origins, one of the things I really want to do is I want to get the camera set up on one of the CPXs. And dream state, I would love to live stream one of the CPXs. I think that might be a little much just because you need multiple cameras. I mean, we'd almost need a production crew the same size as the game crew to pull that one off. But I really think it would make for some compelling viewing for gamers to get a look at that event because it is so unique. It is such a different thing. But failing that, us sitting around talking games are like, point the camera at the table when we've got the guys from the Players Aid there playing something with us. And I suspect we'll have a little bit of hilarity going on. So, cool. Audience, thanks for joining us. Mentioned in Dispatches belongs to the Armchair Dragoons. Please feel free to swing by the site, check us out, hang out in the forums, come join us there. Or, again, Saturday nights over on YouTube, we've got Saturday Night Fights. You can come watch some live non-nude wargaming going on with the tabletop simulator there. Lots of battles involving a short Corsican dude, but we occasionally get a Panzer or two rolling across the map as well. Gary?
Did you say a short Milwaukeean?
Yeah, well, him too. good luck with the Patreon. It's very cool that's paying off for you already. And we will be certain to swing by and wave at Aardwolf's Lair on YouTube on regular occasion as well.
Awesome.
All right, everybody. Good night.
Good night.